There was much talk of the alien-like goby fish.
Odd sea creature, a prize catch.
Looked prehistoric, the worm of death.
Anglers described fish that resembled creature from Alien.
I guess why it's captured such attention is when people post these on social media or see a photo, it just brings out that immediate reaction. Oh my God, what is that? It like looks like an alien or it looks like a deep sea creature. But in real fact, it's actually living a few hundred metres out the front of most people's doorsteps in Darwin.
From specimen jars, backstore drawers and eskies, we bring you a podcast about tropical objects and how they came to be here in the Museum and Art Gallery of the Northern Territory, also known as MAGNET. Welcome to the collection.
Can get brutally hot, and especially those days right at the end of the dry season when it's unbelievably hot. There's no wind and you're out on the shallows fishing for barramundi and the steam is just coming off the water. My name is Nathan Litchens. I'm a very keen fisherman, have always been interested in the natural world and incredibly curious about whatever I find. So it was one of those days and the barramundi just simply weren't playing ball in the afternoon. We'd caught a few already in the morning. We'd gone out the front of the Finnis River and we were just trolling lures in the shallow water over the mud flats. And one of the guys had something stopping his lure from swimming properly, and of course you can feel that in the rod, it just suddenly stops wriggling. And well, what's going on there? So he wound it up expecting to find a twig or a leaf or something on it, and the lure had been diving into the mud and had managed to hook up this rather bizarre creature. None of us had ever seen anything like it before. It looked like a sandworm. So I swung the lure over into my hand and looked at it and I thought, wait a minute, that's not a worm, that's a fish. Couldn't see any eyes on it. And its mouth was open at a full 180 degrees with these nasty sort of glass shard-like teeth sort of curving inwards, much like some sort of weird-looking bear trap. And it grabbed onto my shirt, and it took quite a while to pry it free. But I had a good look at it, took it off the hook, and by then it was dead. It had been hooked right through the belly. I thought, well, this is a really unusual-looking fish, so put it in a plastic bag and stuck it on ice. And I thought, well, I have to take that into the museum at some point, which I did.
Hi, I'm Michael Hammer. I'm the curator of fishes here at the Museum and Art Gallery of the Northern Territory in Darwin. And I'm a marine scientist, so I study fish primarily, and all sorts of things to do with like new species, discovery, biology and ecology and conservation and management. I became involved with studying worm gobies a long time ago, probably nearly 8 years ago. I was aware of them and knew they were out there, but hadn't really seen any. And then a fisherman brought one into the museum, and it was this about maybe 15 centimetres long and skinny with huge horrendous teeth. And the fisherman nicknamed it the worm of death because it actually tried to bite him on the arm. And ever since then, like, I basically couldn't work out what it was. It didn't fit any known species and actually any known genus, which is the next level up. So from there, I figured there was actually a whole heap that could be done to with species discovery in this group and to learn more about them. So it sort of evolved from there. So the worm goby is a type of fish, and the gobies are actually a group of family of fish that's one of the biggest in the world, and they're distributed all around different habitats. We've got species on tropical coral reefs down to kind of cold sand flats in the south. But worm gobies are a particular group that have gone under the mud. So mudskippers, they can swim around or hop around on land, but the worm gobies, family Amblyopinae, have gone under the mud. And to do those sort of things, living in burrows and living in soft sediments, they've had a lot of adaptations in their shape and some of their physical features. So really, if you imagine a worm, a long skinny worm, now add a few little low fins along the top and on the back, and then add some massive big fangs at the front, and you've pretty much got a worm goby. All right, so we're just going to leave my office, which is like the engine room for species discovery. Now we're going up to what we sort of like to say is the iceberg. So when you come to the front of the house of the museum, you see a few specimens on display. When you come up to our stores, there's like a million specimens up there to check out. So that's where we're heading now.
T87, please.
Thank you. All right, so that's the wet store up there. So it's separate from the main building here. We have a dry store, which in the main off part of the museum, which is where we keep all the specimens which are dry preserved. So things like butterflies or shells. But the wet store is things that are wet preserved. So things that are stored in jars, drums or vats full of ethanol, which stops the bacteria and mold and everything else you'd get in Darwin destroying the specimens. This is the research, you know, active research section where we put aside the specimens we're working on so that we've got them in one ready spot. So you can see there's a few different projects going. There's some eels, there's some catfish, rainbow fish. But these three shelves here is basically the national collection of blind gobies, worm gobies. So this is the one we're really interested in. This is the what was originally coined the worm of death. We have one specimen of it. It's really different. It's probably a new genus. It's about 12 centimeters long, but really skinny, much skinnier than any of the other fish we've found. And it's got these big notches on the side that are V. And through our citizen science project, we've had three other records that are photos of this fish. And we've actually got some really interesting observations that they can be bright gold in real life. So one of them was hooked on a gold bomber lure, which is one of the most famous lures around. But it was nearly the same color as the lure, interestingly enough. So. This is my other favourite one. This one's from out in Arnhem Land. It was before I arrived at the museum, collected back in, I think it was, when was that? Let me just look on the jar, 2010. So the angler that caught it took a photo on the boat going, what the hell is that? And then brought it into the museum. We managed to then preserve it and take the tissue. And it's actually the biggest one I've ever seen. It's 33 centimetres long, so a foot long. So these things aren't just tiny. People often say if they grew to a metre long, they'd be very freakish and scary. But it looks pretty impressive. It's got really big fangs. And this particular species is in a genus that has ridges all over the head. So that's how we can tell that apart. And our other worm of death doesn't have that. So that's why we know it's different as well. We're not sure how many actually are out there because they're really hard to catch and really hard to see, but we're not sure if they're really common, and they certainly could be in certain areas. And the reasons why we don't get to see them is they live in this place called a macrotidal environment. So there's 8 meter tides at times of the year. So not very often you can actually get out there and see the mudflats where they exist. Two, there's lots of creatures that swim in that water. So firstly, the crocodiles, then there's the box jellyfish. And then I guess it's also about the environment. They're very remote. Some places in Darwin Harbour are easy to get to, but you know, other estuaries aren't. And overall, they're just not easy to collect as well because the big tides, you know, nets we might normally set get washed away by the big tides and things as well. So the Northern Territory is a challenging place. It's a bit of a frontier in terms of fish biology and fish taxonomy. All those factors of the environmental factors and the remoteness, you know, make it hard to find things. But at the same time, that means there's lots to be discovered. So routinely when we do a field trip, we find things we know are different that have been sort of seen before, but people haven't been able to put a name on them yet. And then there's the unknown unknowns where we just go to a place and go, oh, I just didn't know that existed and it's brand new. So we're still getting that routinely in the Northern Territory, which is pretty exciting from a scientific point of view. I have a bit of a database that I keep of all the records and interactions we have with people about the worm gobies. So that can be from the general public or to researchers, someone in New Guinea drops me one every now and then, or someone in Queensland. And there's about 50 records from stretching since about 2011. So they're not very common. I think it averages out about one record every 1 to 2 months. So it's a long-term project, you're in it for a marathon, but the rewards are pretty exciting and significant. I guess most of taxonomy is a long-term project, no matter what you're doing. So yeah, our projects can be multi-years. You know, sometimes we can find a species and get a name on it relatively quickly, But a lot of the work taxonomists do is like a big jigsaw, and you've got 10 jigsaws mixed in all together, and then you've got to, one, sort out the jigsaw, which puzzles you're working on, then try and put them together. And so the worm gobies is like that. It's actually a whole subfamily of gobies, so there might be 20 to 30 species. So we firstly got to put them into different piles and then work out which bits of those are interesting, and then, you know, work through the process. And the actual describing a species takes a long time in itself to get all the information together. You've got to do lots of counts and measurements, a bit of genetics, and then put it all together into a hypothesis that you can name, and then you've got to publish a paper, which has its own life as well. So in terms of rewards for studying this fish, there's not those big financial gains to be made. You can't commercialise them. It's really, the rewards are about understanding how the top-end ecosystems work, because how these species fit into the broader, you know, estuarine fish community, or how many fish are out there is important, because if we don't know they exist, we can't manage to save them or protect them. And it's also rewarding just from a knowledge point of view, you know, knowing, you know, how many species are out there in part of biodiversity, how rich is a particular area. So museums, and particularly Magnet, has a big role in recording species that occur in the local area. So the Museum and Art Gallery of Northern Territory is the only major museum in tropical sort of northern Australia and its surrounding regions as well. So we're the depository of all the specimens and biological information basically that occurs in the region, and that stretches back over a number of years, so we can start to look at trends in time. Museum collections are a resource for the wider research community, but also for the public. All our records are available online, and we're sort of looking after these specimens for the public good, like a library, but, you know, long term. So these specimens will be here for hundreds of years, hopefully cared for by our team. So actually getting specimens of worm gobies to study is just chance, basically. It comes down to that. Odd researchers catch one accidentally when they're doing other things. We can get the odd one when we have these small windows of opportunity. We've collected a few. But 90% of the specimens and photos and information we get is from the general public that accidentally come across these things when they're fishing. So the fishing lures, when they drag the mud sometimes, they get down into the burrows, or the fish is at the top and it accidentally hooks them. They bring them in and they go, oh, what the hell is that? And that's how we get most of our leads. So it's sort of maybe a needle in a haystack, once in a lifetime event per person. But when you combine how many fishermen are up in the, or anglers are up in the Northern Territory, it becomes a better odds. So I guess a final message for anglers, if you're out there on the water using your lures and they accidentally drag a prehistoric looking creature out of the mud, please keep us in mind. If you can get it, return it alive, get a photo first. If it's damaged, put it on ice and let us know. Contact us through our website. You'll get in contact with me and I'll be in touch pretty quick to let you know what's going on and how to sort it out.
The Collection is a Museum and Art Gallery of the Northern Territory podcast, and this episode featured Magnet's curator of fishes, Dr. Michael Hammer, and keen fisherman and aquatic ecologist, Nathan Litchens. The Collection is produced by Story Projects, with production by Cinnamon Nippard and Laurie Uden. Music composition by James Mangerhig and mixing by Hamish Robertson. Johanna Bell is the executive producer. This episode was created on Larrakia land in the tropical top end of the Northern Territory through funding from National Science Week NT. Subscribe to The Collection wherever you get your podcasts, or for more info, head to magnt.net.au/The Collection.